It's a story of a family business that has morphed over the years in order to adapt. And to hear the tell that story, it's Steve and Martin Lippick from Lippick's Engagement. We'll hear their story along with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, who presents this program. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. This is The Business of Family Business, telling the story of family businesses all across the St. Louis region. Martin, what do you know about the early years of Lippick's?
Lippick's founded 155 years ago in 1863 by George Berg, who made solid gold pen points to go on quills.
Was that the main purpose of the company to sell?
The main purpose of the company was to make pen points.
Wow.
That was the only purpose.
You said 1863.
1863.
Yeah.
That was before the self-filling fountain pens and all that. That came later.
And that was also before the assassination of Lincoln. To put that in perspective, that's how long the company has been around for.
Right.
Civil War.
Civil War times.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It was, and he was 18 years old.
18 when he started.
Did
he grow up here in St. Louis?
He was born in Milwaukee, and they moved to St. Louis. His family moved to St. Louis.
Hmm.
And then he tutored under a couple people, Higgins and a Holland, who also made pen points.
Oh, okay.
And that's where he learned the trade.
Was that a big industry here?
Not necessarily a big industry here, but it was a growing industry within the United States at that time.
What was the first location?
The first location was at 310 Olive Street,
mm-hmm.
and it was in an office building. It was just an office.
We were talking about this. It's so far down, because we're on Olive Street as well, but we're farther west. So if you keep going east on Olive, that might even be... The original location might even be where the Arch Grounds
where
are.
Where the Arch Grounds are,
which is kind of neat, too, if you think about it.
It is neat, yes.
You can probably do some aerial shots and figure out somewhat if you really wanted to get into it. You have photos, too, though.
We do have photos, yes.
Yeah. What was the company like then? They just specifically made the quill pens and would sell it to the St. Louis region?
They would make the pen points for
pen
the
points,
quills.
Yeah.
Okay, they did not necessarily make the pens at that point. And they would, and then, of course, dip pens... Moved along, came along into the area, and then the self-filling fountain pen progressed on in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
A fellow by the name of Waterman made the first fountain pen, self-filling fountain pen.
So what exactly is a pen point then?
A pen point can be of any different type of metal.
Uh-huh.
What they specialized in back then was 14 karat solid gold. And they would have sheets of solid gold, and they would die stamp it out, not as we think of die stamping, but by hand, each one, in the shape of a pen point. And then they would form it to the size and to the texture that they needed, and then they'd slit that piece of gold, and then on the end tip of it would go a piece of iridium, which determines the... size of the ink that goes through, as far as if it's a medium point or fine point, accountant's point, broad point.
Was this a luxury item?
No, it was becoming a used very standardly. That's how they wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that what most people do not realize is that the gold never reaches the paper. It's not the gold point. The gold point gives some flexibility, but the only thing that writes is the iridium tip.
So how many years was he making those before the company started to morph again?
He did that in 1906 when my grandfather joined his father-in-law.
Okay.
And at that time, they got more into the my grandfather got more into the fountain pen business. The Waterman had started, got into the self-filling fountain pens and that, and had several brands that they put out. In fact, he had my grandfather came from Croatia, and the ironic thing was he made one of the first self-filling fountain pens, but did not know to patent it.
I see. So even though he was one of the first, or may be the first, that's pretty remarkable.
Right.
Do you still have any samples from that far back?
We do have a few samples those particular pens, yes.
What a time to live in. You know, today we look for the latest smartphone, you know, early 1900s, fountain pens blowing people's minds. It's a brand new type of idea. When your grandfather got involved? Was he in the industry as well, or how? Or was it just because he was in the family and they offered him possibly a position?
No, he was in the bakery business.
Oh, okay.
and he had several children. Actually, George Berg's daughter was his second wife. Mm-hmm. He had had four children by the first wife, and so he had an opportunity to go in with his father-in-law.
Yeah,
and he adapted to making pinpoints. Moved on, and then in 1910, he did his first fountain pen, self-filling fountain pen.
With the history of the company, it would have been your grandfather came in about 40 years after the company was already established.
Correct.
His grandfather was a baker, but found his way in, and it's just part of the story of what is now known as Lippick's Engagement. We'll continue our conversation with Martin and Steve Lippick coming up next on The Business of Family Business. It's presented by CMA Consulting, and two-thirds of family businesses do not make the generational transition. There's a lot of decisions that are made along the way. The farther you get down into the family tree, sometimes the successors are prepared to be effective owners. Sometimes they're thrusted into a position where they have to get in and help the family business. Either way, CMA Consulting, whatever your starting point may be, if you want to have an effective generational transition to up those odds in order to develop the next generation to be effective owners, you have to reach out to CMA Consulting and our friend Dan Bean. Give him a call at 314-721-1860. No obligation call. You can just give him a message and say, Dan, what can you do for our family business? And have that conversation and see if that's something you'd like to pursue. If you want to check him out on the web, cmaconsult.com is the website. When was the last time your family actually discussed these sort of things, how to apply insights into the business or even plan out what the future may hold? CMA Consulting. Find him on the web, cmaconsult.com. Welcome back to The Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. And if you know a great family business, you should encourage them to reach out to Dan Bean at CMA Consulting and say, hey, I heard this program. It's on the weekends on KMOX called The Business of Family Business. You should go on there. Tell them that. Have them reach out to CMA Consulting, their website, cmaconsult.com. Just message Dan Bean and let them know you're interested. Our story this weekend is Lippick's Engagement. Martin and Steve Lippick joining us in studio with Dan Bean from CMA Consulting.
Your grandfather was a baker, got into the business. What are your memories of your grandfather?
Actually, I have no memories of him. Mm. He died when I was six.
Oh, I see. So this would have been beforehand.
That would have been beforehand.
Yeah. Your father, was he involved in the business as well?
He was involved in the business as well, yes.
So how did it work, the ownership of the company? Was your grandfather, was he a partner or a partial owner?
Well, my grandfather took over as head of the company in 1908. And then he had sons. Actually, he had all of his kids at one time came in, but three of the sons carried on the business. And when he died, it transferred by his death to mm-hmm. the three sons that were involved in the business at that time.
So at that point, your father would have came a one-third business owner,
One-third business owner, yes.
Okay. And when you were growing up, did your dad talk about the business with you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Had to work with it.
What were you doing in the early years?
Well, in the early years, I was 12 when I started the work, and I worked at the factory down on Gravois and worked in the back.
Yeah.
Shipping, receiving, stuff like that. And then later, I actually worked in the retail pen store. Learned how to repair pens and fix them and learned that part of the business.
So you would be fourth generation?
I am fourth generation.
Right. And Steve, you'd be fifth generation?
Correct.
Because Steve is here as well, which is Martin's son.
Right.
And your experience is probably a lot different from your father's because a lot has changed in the industry and just really business in general over the last 100 years, you know?
Yeah, he didn't make me start working at 12.
No? Not even a little? You didn't go in and sweep floors or anything?
No, we all did that. And I, of course, remember the pen store on Olive, that kind of thing. And I remember, you know, watching all the people come in decorating for Christmas. We always had to stock the shelves.
Yeah.
that kind of thing. So, yeah, definitely. I definitely worked there, but I didn't have a full-time job like he did at the time I was 12. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You made do.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Lipix, what's the history of the locations? You were on Olive Street. What happened after?
Well, the first store was at 811 Locust Street.
Okay.
And then they expanded next door to 813 Locust Street. Mm-hmm. In 1949, they actually opened a second store at 924 Washington. Mm-hmm. And then the big thing with Lipix became in 1950, they got the corner of 8th and Olive, mm-hmm. which became known as the Penn Corner of St. Louis.
The Penn Corner?
The Penn Corner.
I like that.
Because the only thing that Lipix sold in the retail store was pens. Items. It wasn't stationery store or office supply or that.
What would it look like when you would walk in there? Would it just be displays of pens?
Just displays of pens.
Yeah.
Yeah. People would come in and they would bring their pen in because it scratched or it needed some work on the nib.
Uh-huh.
And so you would take the pen and you'd take it back to the repair people and they would adjust the nib or fix it for them. A lot of times at that point, you would point out other pens that were available.
Mm-hmm.
Other people were coming in for gifts to give at graduation time and Christmas time, and you'd hit a price point and you would show them. And of course, the other thing that was big at that time was desk sets.
This is a big generational thing for me. I'm 35. For me, pens are something you get in a box and they're disposable. You know, I've never experienced outside of special occasions, graduations, marriages, things like that. Sometimes you'll get a nice little set as a gift, a special occasion at work. If you worked at the company for so long, they would use it as a special gift. That things have really changed since then.
It has. That all went by the wayside with the invention of the ballpoint pen.
Yeah.
And as a worked on that, and Reynolds invented the first one, and then Paper Mate came out and did a beautiful job of marketing, and then Bic came in with their 19-cent ball pen, which really shook up the whole writing instrument market.
Yeah.
And that.
So you said your grandfather invented, what kind of pen was it?
It was a self-filling fountain pen.
Self-filling fountain pen. Does he get any credit? Have you seen anywhere where he gets credit for that, or have you ever tried to maybe make a asterisk in the history book somewhere?
No, not really? Not really, no.
Oh, why? Well, for you guys, it's meaningful, of course.
It's meaningful for us,
because,
yes.
Because you know the history for something like that. Steve, what made you interested in Lipix?
Well,
I know it's a family business and all, but what made you interested? We hear a lot of stories of different generations that come about into the family business after maybe leaving the family business, going to college, maybe experimenting with a different industry, but you are still very much involved. You're the next generation. What was your path to where you are today?
So, like I said, I used to do odd things around the business, that kind of stuff, and I always swore I would never, ever work for my father. and I would never work in the family business. I had no interest whatsoever. I wanted to be an engineer. I wanted to work with computers. Pens were pretty much the farthest thing away from that. So I went to school, actually got agriculture engineering degree at Cornell,
mm-hmm.
Which allowed me to marry business and computers, and then went to work for Emerson Electric for 11 years. But I moved away. I lived in Ohio and Kentucky.
Oh, okay.
And every time at Christmas or came back to see Dad, I'd tell him everything he was doing wrong in the family business.
Oh.
You know, all the things he needed to improve, he needed to modernize, he needed to...
Unsolicited advice?
Oh, definitely unsolicited. You know, I was that ornery, know-it-all, cocky kid saying,
well, of course.
You know, no, Dad, you got to do it this way. So I had an opportunity with Emerson to move and head up a manufacturing facility in Mexico. And my wife said, "Yeah, I'm not so thrilled with that."
Mm-hmm.
And we were in Kentucky at the time, and Dad needed a manager. And he's like, "Well, you know, it'd be nice if you would just put your money where your mouth is and come help me here if you're going to do all this for Emerson." And Tracy and I talked about it and realized it was a it really was a life choice.
I want to talk about that relationship, but I also want to ask Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. And another common theme that you hear with a lot of different family businesses, normally the next generation, they have ideas, and sometimes the advice is wanted, other times unsolicited. But in the end, it shows that there is some interest there, and sometimes families are able to work that so the next generation can get into the business.
Absolutely. There's all kinds of reasons the next generation comes in, and a lot of them come in after swearing they will never enter the family business, which sounds like might be the case here. And every generation has new ideas. They have new technology. They have new experience of growing up. And it's usually 25 years more modern than their parents.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean they always know everything, because the current generation knows a lot. The next generation knows some few things, but they both tend to overvalue and overestimate how much they know that will be helpful to the business. So it usually results in a little bit of tension and strain, and occasionally headbutting every once in a while.
Martin, I want to get your perspective on what we just heard. So with Steve coming in and saying, hey, Dad, I have all these ideas. This is what you should be doing differently. Were you receptive to those ideas at first, or was it a, I get it, I know what I'm doing, don't worry, type of moment?
Well, it was a combination thereof. he was coming from, as I envisioned it, a big corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And when he called up people, he had certain power because of who he was with.
Mm-hmm.
When we were a small company, and our industry was probably lagged as a whole at that point, technology and that, he could call and get a truck in and motors built right away. They were telling us we have to take 6 weeks to imprint a keychain. So, and he had a hard time with that, and I had a hard time trying to figure out how we're going to speed our vendors up. It was just a case of meshing different thoughts and that. Actually, we got along very well.
Yeah.
And that we never killed one another. But, you know, he had a learning curve to learn how our industry worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a learning curve on how to improve to take a lot of what he knew and ahead and bring it into our business.
How do you find out if the next generation is actually interested in carrying on the family business? We're going to talk to Martin and Steve Lippick about that next. They're from Lippick's Engagement. Also, Dan Bean from CMA Consulting will continue our conversation with them on the business of family business on KMOX. Back to the business of family business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and it's presented by CMA Consulting. Dan Bean joins us from CMA. Also, Martin and Steve Lippick from Lippick's Engagement in studio to tell their story of a company that was founded in the 1860s. Yes, think about how much has changed since then. Same with their company. A lot has changed. Do you have any other kids?
Yes, have six other.
Okay.
We had total seven.
Any other children involved in Lippick's?
Actually, they all were at one time. They all worked at Lippick's. My wife and I had always said that we would never require any of them to come into the business, but they were all exposed to the business.
In this case, with Steve being outside of it, were you trying to orchestrate a way to get him back in? Did you use this experience where he was giving you ideas and say, I might be able to take that and get him to come back?
Actually, I took a very low-key part on it, that I would not pressure him.
Yeah.
I had made that decision that I would not pressure any of my kids to come into the business.
How many of your kids are in the business today?
Actually, only Steven.
Oh, okay.
The other ones away.
He scared the other ones away. No. We've had a couple that have worked in the business, but none of them on a real serious Well, they just worked for a year or so and then moved on to other things.
So, Steve, how many years have you been now with Lippick's?
This is my 23rd year.
Great.
So, joined in 1995 and, been there for 23 years.
And you were integrating computers even back in 95?
Yeah. So, kind of interesting. At Emerson, my oldest daughter was one of the first photographs that was sent by email across Emerson's intranet. And, you know, when I started with Dad, you know, he was still on DOS 1.0.
Mm-hmm.
So I was struggling with okay, I was doing all this with Emerson technology-wise, and I don't even have the tools to be able to do it here. So he's right. There was a learning curve in that aspect on both things.
Yeah. During this time, I understand there might have been a business split, or did something happen at Lipix where there was a part of the company that might have split off?
At one point, there was the three brothers that were owning the business.
Which was your
which
father
was
and
my
his,
father, Emil.
And your two uncles.
And then my Uncle Joe and Uncle Leonard. Mm-hmm. In 1968, why Uncle Joe decided to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And which he did, and then his two sons, who were also in the business at that time, also left and formed another company.
Hmm.
And that.
So was it? Those would have been your cousins.
Those would have been my cousins.
Right. And did your uncle transfer ownership to them, or did they just make a clean split, and maybe your uncle would have cashed out at that point?
He cashed out at that point.
Okay. So what did they form?
They formed a company called Alexander Manufacturing, which is actually a advertising specialty manufacturer.
So it wasn't necessarily a competitor. It was just they were starting another business?
Well, it was a competitor to our manufacturing business that because we were in the advertising specialty business that we had gotten into in 1930.
When you say advertising specialty, is that more like printing, ad printing, or was it something different? Were you creating ads?
We were one of the first companies that printed advertising copy and logos on pens and pencils.
Wow, I see. So it was the logoed items, really?
It was the logoed items.
Oh, so that's what they were doing. I see.
Right.
Was that difficult when you have a part, your cousins, they create a business that's very similar in a direct competitor to you. Now you're competing against people that are family. Was that difficult?
I can't say that it was difficult. Mm-hmm. We went through the normal separation mm-hmm. period, that there were some discussions because, agreement over valuation of the company and stuff like that. They were going off on theirs and we were going off on ours. And you can't change what's happening. You just look ahead and move forward. That's what we did.
I see. So when that happened, after that point, did you guys change your direction as a company to adjust for that?
Actually, we had basically two different companies.
Yeah.
We had the manufacturing business, and we also had the retail store and the business. The other brother, Leonard, and his daughter, basically in 1969, that merged with ISC Industries in Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
and they went with them, and they took the manufacturing.
Oh.
And my father, Emil, and myself took the retail pen store and the wholesale operation, which we were selling pens and pencils throughout the United States. And then we moved into the advertising specialty business from a distributor standpoint, where we resold for various companies.
Oh, okay.
And then down the line, we moved into the employee service award programs.
Do you remember any of your clients that you may have printed pens for?
We had Western Electric, we had Southwestern Bell, a lot of different companies. We did a lot.
Southwestern Bell probably printed a lot of different things.
They did.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, I want to talk to you about your experience and how you've seen different family businesses have a split off and sometimes they become competitors and when they go their separate ways. How does this compare to the other ones you've seen?
I think this actually is pretty much on the good end of the continuum.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is the family still talks to each other,
mm-hmm.
even though the business is split some decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
And any time that happens, you have to chalk that up as that's a significant win.
Mm-hmm. Today, Steve, what does the company look like at Lipix?
We're an engagement agency. So what we do is we help companies engage their employees, customers, and their suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we still use the same tools. We still use pens, promotional products, incentives, and premiums. But we also do things like surveys and assessments. And
mm-hmm.
what we do is we work with companies to be able to attract and develop and retain their employees and customers better.
When did you start shifting towards that direction?
It was pretty soon when I came on with my dad. My dad had done a great job of growing a promotional distributorship and had added the recognition side of things such as service awards and, and awards. Coming from a corporate background, I wanted to know why. I wanted to know why people bought stuff from us and gave it away for free. I kept asking that question, and the answers I got were, you know, all sorts of different things, such as appreciation, teamwork, goodwill, advertising. In 1998, I read an article from the Harvard Business Review that kind of just outlined it, and it was called The Employee Customer Profit Chain. And I realized that this is what we were doing. We just didn't know we were doing.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, he mentioned that article, the Harvard Business article. Are you familiar with that publication?
Yes, that we subscribe to that journal, and that is a well-read article. And basically, the philosophy is businesses should take care of their employees and then let the employees take care of the customers. Mm-hmm. If they do a good job of taking their customers, profits will follow. And so it's a very simple logic that once you stop to think about it, it makes sense. But somebody probably made a lot of money on publishing that research.
We'll continue one last time with both Martin and Steve Lippick from Lippick's Engagement coming up on The Business of Family Business presented by CMA Consulting. And I've learned through this program that family businesses have a lot of other obstacles to pass. What if a family business owner is ready to make that transitional decision to the next generation? I know they like to keep a desk in an office inside of the company. It's very difficult because you're attached to it. You have that feeling only a family business owner would know. I also learned that a lot of the great family businesses don't take the business side home with them so they can still sit down on a holiday and enjoy the company of their family. Whatever your decision for your family business may be, have you discussed it with anyone? You should consider talking to CMA Consulting. They have a complimentary, no-obligation meeting. They'll sit down and say, here's what we can do for your family business. What does it hurt to give them a call and ask what CMA can do? 314-721-1860 is the phone number if you want to check them out on the web, cmaconsult.com. They have all the experts for you, talent and tax, accounting and banking, risk management. What they excel in is increasing the odds of a successful generational transition and keeping family harmony. You want to be on the same page. You want to make sure the next generation can be effective owners. How about you just give CMA a call and say, what can you do? CMAconsult.com. That's the website, CMAconsult.com. It's the website every family business should know, CMAconsult.com. Thanks for joining us this weekend on The Business of Family Business. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, and it's presented by CMA Consulting. Dan Bean from CMA joins us, along with Steve and Martin from Lippick's Engagement. And if you'd like to hear this entire story, maybe you missed a little bit, or you'd like to check out some of our previous episodes, just go to KMOX.com. In the podcast section, search for The Business of Family Business. Martin, when you heard this plan, and when you and Steve may have been talking about it, what were your initial thoughts in what did you think at the time? Because that was a little bit of a shift from what you're doing, even though there's overlap, but it was definitely some decision-making had to be done if that's the direction you wanted to go.
I totally agreed with it because one of the things of being a small business is that you can adapt easily. Mm-hmm. And this was a further extension of what we had gone from the advertising specialty promotional business to employee recognition. And this was a further extension of that business to be an engagement agency.
Yeah, easy.
And that. So that there was no problem at that point.
Did you guys ever fight about anything?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've stormed out of the office before.
Yeah. Well, without getting into specifics, what happens normally? If you guys have a conflict in the way something's happening at Lippick's, or maybe you have a disagreement with something inside of the company, what do you guys normally do?
One of the things that we did is we had decided when he came with the company in 1995 that we would never talk about it at home.
Okay.
We would never bring it into the home, and it would be discussed on the outside. And there was a few times when we stood at the front door and had a discussion.
You're on the porch.
On the porch. And then we'd walk in, and it was family.
Yeah.
We were not going to let it tear the family up.
Was that difficult at some point? Was it hard? Because when you're really into it and it's a family business and you have so much on the line there, is it hard to resist going home and continuing to work, or is it easy for you to leave it behind?
The thing where I was coming from is when the transition between my father and myself. My father always talked about it at home. And I was not pleased with that.
You recognized that at a young age?
Yes. So I decided that that was not going to be the way we did it. Not that we wouldn't have discussions, but they were going to be held on a business thing, and the family time was going to be family time.
Yeah, and that was an observation you had from your father. And, Steve, there's probably a lot of observations you've had from your father that have shaped you to be the business person you are today.
Yeah. You know, one thing that, you know, I've gotten from my dad is, you know, kind of do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it, you know, to live up to your character and principles. And that's something that I try and do in our company and make kind of a motto of our company, because I think that's in the end what you have to stand on. The other thing that my dad, that I think we did well, I don't think we did it on purpose, was I worked for Emerson, you know, since I was in high school. They helped me through college, and then I worked for them for another 8 years after that. And so the thing that I think is really important and that helped our success in our transition was I had other ideas. I'd seen another world. And so, you know, that's something I want to do with my kids is make sure they see another world before they make a decision that this is the world they want. They may want it from the get-go, but they have to go see another world before they have to go travel somewhere else before they just grow up inside the company.
How many kids do you have?
I have three.
Three kids?
Yes.
Any of them show interest?
The youngest one does.
Oh,
The older two have almost medical type inclination after their mom. And so one's an occupational therapist and one's a forensic biologist. So, but my youngest daughter is only a freshman in high school, and she says she wants a business.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting. I want to go back to something Steve and Martin also talked about before, which happens to be finding ways to get employees engaged in the company. Maybe people are always interested in finding ways for their own employees to get engaged, and then someone comes out and says, you know, we have some ideas for you that might be able to help. What's the value in making sure the people that work in a company are engaged with the company?
The employees who are more highly engaged tend to provide better service to customers. Mm-hmm. They tend to come up with better ideas to improve processes or to improve products or services. And I think those companies generally tend to be more efficient and more profitable.
Yeah. Okay. So there is a lot that parlays into that. Steve, what are the future plans for Lipix?
We want to continue to grow. We think that the engagement aspect of and needs of corporations is just growing. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we have is innovation is just rapidly accelerating. The world's growing smaller with social networks, et cetera. So people know the good and the bad of companies quickly, within a matter of minutes or seconds. And then, you know, the where we're at right now is full employment. So, you know, one of the things in St. Louis right now is that there's 20% more jobs than there are people looking for work.
Oh, wow.
So for anybody to get another good employee, they have to steal it from somebody else. They have to steal from a competitor or another company. And if that competitor wants a good employee, they're probably looking at, you know, at you, at that company to take employees. So it's more and more of a critical issue that leaders of organizations are looking at is trying to keep and grow and develop their own their employees. So we want to expand. We also service kind of the middle tier. We don't try and go, we have some large customers, but we like the middle tier, the 100 to 1,000 employees. And there's just not a lot of people like us out there giving these kind of services. So we think that there's good opportunity for us, and we want to grow and expand.
Do you mostly focus across the St. Louis region, or are you looking beyond?
Yeah, right now we're basically a St. Louis metropolitan. We have some national customers, and we do some things nationally. My dream would be to be a Midwest regional, to be the best, not necessarily the biggest, but when people say, hey, what's the best engagement agency or company you can work with. Well, Lipix is hand down that company. That would be my goal.
Steve, you're the fifth generation.
Correct.
How do you, I guess, approach the possible sixth generation? You mentioned that two of the three will probably go into a different field, but there's one person interested. You said you kind of, are you trying to nurture that at all? Or are you purposely trying to go and hopefully the person finds their own route, which will be to Lipix?
Yeah, I hope she finds her own route. Andy is 8 years younger than her brother, Garrett, and 11 years younger than her sister, Natalie. And so she definitely has a different family dynamic than the older two have. She has been in the business since she was 2 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
And used to give Tracy a break and bring her into my office, and she'd sleep. You know, she'd fall asleep on the drive to the office. She'd sleep for 2 hours in my office while I got work done. She'd fall asleep on the way home, and then Tracy'd get another hour out of it. One of the things was when Tracy worked is I'd pick her up from kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And so she'd spend the afternoon in the office, in my office, just coloring or whatever. But she'd go to meetings and understand it. And so one of the things she did within a month of that is she goes, "Hey, Dad, I need some of those trading cards that you have." And I'm like, "Trading cards?" "Yeah, yeah. When you meet some guy, you trade cards with him." I'm like, "Oh, business cards." And she goes, "Yes." And so I said, "Sure, go talk to our creative director. She'll get you some business cards." And Heather asked her and said, "Well, what title? You need a title for a business card." She goes, "I'll take the same as Dad." And she goes, "Well, Dad's president. How about vice president?" She goes, "That works." So ever since she's been 5 years old, she's been vice president of the company, at least on business cards. So hopefully she finds her way. And if it's in the company, that's awesome. And that's great. And Tracy and I are just now kind of just starting the understanding, learning about how to transfer a business. Because, you know, till now, our two older ones didn't show any interest at all.
You better believe I'm getting my kid business cards. That's such a great story. Love that. So people wanted to learn more about Lipix, or maybe they wanted to talk to you and kind of get a better idea of some of the things you do. How can people engage with you?
Well, obviously we are on the web. Our website is www.lipix.com, and Lipix is spelled L-I-P-I-C. Would be the best way to kind of see some of that. My contact information, my email is slipic@lipic.com. Mm-hmm. And then our business location is at 10,030 Big Bend Road, mm-hmm. Which is right at the corner of Big Bend and 44. Any of those ways would be great ways to contact us.
Martin, how many years have you been with the company? Do you still have an office somewhere?
Yes, I still have an office. My son still allows me to have an office.
I won't let him give it up.
He won't let me give it up. I have tried a couple times, and he will not let me give it up. I guess if you count the 12 years that I was 12 years old, that means
of course.
I was 60. I'm 60 years with the 65 years with the.
Oh, that's great. Do you have business cards yourself?
I still have business cards myself.
Yes. Everyone needs some business cards.
That's right. I think one of the things that Lipix is known for is service,
mm-hmm.
and the ability to adjust and come up with solutions for the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Not what we're looking to do, but what benefits the customer the mm-hmm. best.
And that's part of adapting. You're able to find ways to better serve your customers and help them.
Yeah, I think the true story of Lipix in five generations is just that. Each generation has somehow in some way changed the company to what was going on, what the economy was at that time, what the technology was at that time, that kind of stuff. Because when you think about it, we were part of the original iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how people communicated, was by putting pen to paper.
Dan Bean from CMA Consulting, what are your thoughts on the story you just heard?
I think three thoughts today, Ryan. One, this is an amazing and long history of business at 155 years and still going strong. Great success story. The second, I counted it. The transitions of business as they told this story. Mm-hmm. I counted five, from quill pen tips to fountain pens to advertising specialty to service awards and then employee engagement. Mm-hmm. And the third point I would add, to get to a Generation 5 ownership in a family business defies the odds. Only about 1% of all family businesses make it to generation five.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Next thing you know, you're going to be looking up burial shots to see where the original building was. You'll put it.
We'll have to do that at
the base of the arch or something for you know. Martin and Steve, thank you so much for coming in, sharing your story here today.
Ryan, thank you very much. Dan, thank you very much. Appreciate it.